the last word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
The week trending, we're joined by Dave Hanratty back with us again. And Dave, I hope you don't mind when I say how happy I am to see Brianna Perkins back with us from 10 News Plus in Sydney these days.
That's the one.
You're home. Well, you're sort of home from home, aren't you?
It still feels like home. I always say, you know, I'm going back home and it is Ireland and not Sydney. I still haven't adjusted the full way yet. But yeah, I'm back. So all the, you know, far-right trolls on Twitter told me to go back where I came from. I did, and I enjoyed the summer. But I'm back in Ireland for a visit.
Okay.
Well, I hope this level of passive aggression isn't going to continue towards me, by the way. I didn't get a hug. I got thrown under the bus. I can leave if you'd prefer.
Oh, Dave.
No, Dave. We value your contribution, as always. But
thanks.
It's Brianna.
Yeah, no, in fairness, welcome back. It's great to see you.
Okay. And then, Brianna, we decided that the first story of the week that we would get you to cover in the week trending would be about Danny Healy-Rae.
Yeah, I feel like there's always, you know, a couple of certainties in life, and it's death, taxes, and the Healy-Rae saying something completely daft. But this time he's really put his foot in it. I think this really goes down in the Hall of Fame of absolute clangers, and that is Danny Healy-Rae has made some remarks talking about autism in the dollar debate, kind of centering around this sort of idea that there was less occurrences of autism back in the good old days. And he's linked the rise to autism to a lack of vitamins. And it's gone down as well as you think it would. It's about as, you know, funny as a fart in a phone box, as we'd say in Australia, because it's highly offensive. Like, you want to laugh at it and go, oh, it's a daft thing, but it's incredibly insulting given that, you know, people with autism and parents of autism have enough to be dealing with, fighting the government for basic resources. Now they have to dispel like this kind of crap. Like, it's very offensive and it's very insulting.
Straight out of the Robert F. Kennedy playbook, really, isn't it?
I think it's skirting it. Like, I don't know whether it's just sort of an ignorant thing to say, and it was, you know, or it's a dog whistle to that kind of politics of mental illness isn't real, autism isn't real, ADHD isn't real. And again, highly insulting, given that Ireland has had a lot of catching up to do in the last couple of years.
But we have,
and
Dave,
we're not there.
Yeah, a lot more diagnosis.
That's the thing. The charity As I Am was very quick to point out that autism is a natural variation in human neurology. And it's not that there are more autistic people than in the past. It's just that there's more people who have access to a proper diagnosis. Now, I would say it's pretty RFK Jr., to be honest with you. Don't get me wrong, we can always have the, is this just ignorance? Because after all, this is a man who, as he once famously proclaimed, God controls the weather. So presumably God's not in a very good mood right now because I got soaked on the way over. But it's either ignorance.
That was just an individual shower rain for you, Dave, possibly. it's been passive aggression in the weather.
It's been a tough day, and I heard you talking about Marcus Rashford earlier on. I'm delighted for him. Fair play. Anyway, look, it's shameful. It's shameful commentary, and even just it kind of speaks to an ignorance that's kind of, you could argue, government-wide. I was speaking to someone today about this, and you know, who has a daughter who has disabilities, and he was saying that autism places and diagnoses are, to quote this person, a dot in the cruel and outdated way our government treats people with disabilities and carers as well. So we're so far behind the times in terms of how we are treating people, and to have this kind of rhetoric come up, even if it is from Danny Healy-Rae, and you roll your eyes, it's not helpful in any way, shape or form.
Now, meanwhile, Brianna, tell us about Paul Gogarty, the Independent TD's ideas how to deal with antisocial behaviour by the youth.
Yeah, so he's brought a private member motion onto antisocial behaviour. And it's interesting because, you know, you could argue that there is a problem with antisocial behaviour, particularly in urban areas. There have been reports, you know, both anecdotal, you see people saying, you know, go out for dinner and there are kids in tracksuits harassing, you know, throwing bottles. We've also seen it, you know, sort of high-profile crimes over the last couple of years, that tourist being attacked in the city centre. So you could argue that, yes, this is a problem, but I don't know if this is the way to go about it. He's talking about removing high-value items such as e-scooters, bikes, electric bikes, and also PlayStations as possible punishments for these kids under 18, instead of dealing with them, you know, maybe sending them off to juvie or really hardline. No one wants to see those hardline things in place. So he's put a few really interesting things in. I don't know. He sort of acknowledges in this motion that there's a problem with Gardaí numbers and staffing and resourcing. I don't know if getting Gardaí to go into kids' bedrooms and removing their Xboxes and laptops is going to address that in any way.
What about
do you think it is?
Well, what about fines for parents where appropriate, which I think a lot of people would obviously be up in arms.
Is that in his?
That's proposal? In the manifesto, yeah. And this is the thing, right? I saw the name Paul Gogarty, and I assumed this would be, you know, his reputation precedes him because, of course, the famous deputy stag thing, you know, a penny for his late thoughts. I think it's kind of reasonable here and there. Like, I don't see a problem with taking away, you know, like, kind of luxuries off people if they're not following codes of society. But and of course, rehabilitation and education is much more important than punishment. But there's a lot in here.
I mean, for example, the bit about parents, because yes, maybe there are parents who don't do enough to try and help their children moderate their behaviour, but there is also many parents who are literally at wits' end because they're unable to stop their teenagers doing things. And would it be fair to treat them in the same way as the parents who'd make no effort?
Well, they tried to bring this in Australia where school attendance was linked to welfare payments, benefit payments. So if your kid didn't go to school, it would take away the whole family's payments, mum's, dad, whoever's living in the household.
Sorry, does that not believe that those who don't go to school is just because they're in receipt of welfare? There are lots of kids who don't go to school and their parents might be working.
Well, it was more flipped around to say if you're... Also, we get like family tax as well. So that comes out of like working parents also receive benefits.
Or like child benefit here in Ireland.
Okay. So it was basically saying that if you don't send your kids to school or if they get in trouble, we will financially punish the family. But then that's quite disproportionate because kids who are already struggling and playing up might be from already disadvantaged families, and hang on, they're going to get double whacked now because there's going to be less resources for the other kids. So it wasn't very successful. I've seen various attempts to tackle youth crime over the years, like the three strikes and you're in rule, which was, you know, three crimes, didn't matter which three crimes, you were going into a juvenile facility. So we saw kids going to jail for stealing about $20 or 20 euros worth of markers, say, from deals. Do you know what I mean? So that wasn't great either. Youth crime is notoriously hard to tackle because you don't want to be too hardline. You don't want to create recidivism and a life of coming in and out of jail, but you also want to still create enough consequences so that people think they can't just keep getting away with it because they're under 18.
But then they say sometimes detention becomes like a finishing school, becomes like a university of crime.
Yeah, and we've seen in recidivism, which is, you know, going back through the jail system, that spikes the younger the offender is.
But then again, Dave, and particularly there are retailers around Dublin who would complain that there are kids who behave badly all the time because they feel they can get away with anything and that they shout and roar abuse to shopkeepers or any guardie coming to try and stop them.
Yeah, it's probably worth pointing out that Paul Gogarty does frame this as saying, look, this is a multifaceted problem. It's not one thing and it shouldn't be dealt with in that kind of one hardline way. And he also acknowledges that there isn't enough resources for guardie and kind of similar outlets there as well. Even going through his list, like it's a combination of it's quite lengthy and then it's also quite vague. He's got one line here about meaningful restorative justice to pay back damages. And I'm like, what does that mean? But then he does make the point that, look, I get once or twice a year in my position to stand up in the Dáil and present a motion. And so that's why this is what it is. And it is reflective of what I'm hearing in my constituency. So again, it was a bit more level-headed.
It's real life experience of
it
people.
Is. Yeah, it is. And as Brianna says, it is a very, very complex problem, but it is, at the end of the day, a genuine problem. And while I'm saying, look, I wouldn't have a problem with taking consoles away. Like, when I misbehaved as a kid, I wasn't given, you know, like, my parents would have been like, absolutely no PlayStation for you tonight, Dave. And it's like, I had to learn that lesson. I'd like to think that I did learn that lesson, but who knows? Maybe the jury's still out.
Okay. What do you think of Sally Rooney, Brianna, saying she can no longer safely enter the UK without potentially facing arrest?
I mean, she feels like she can't safely enter the UK. I mean, but also, would you want to find out you set foot on soil and your way is finding out, is, you know, being arrested?
But it's surprising to think of the UK as being like the United States. A lot of people are nervous about going into the United States now, but the idea that that might happen in Britain is, I think, a little bit sinister, isn't it?
So there are organisations that end up sort of on, the UK has a ban list, Australia has, you know, a watch list. So she has been supporting a group called Palestine Action. The UK has sort of flagged this as maybe a bit of a problematic group because of their actions and sort of the way they protest. And she's saying that actually because she's been so publicly supportive of them, that would also, you know, create a little bit of a grey area, which doesn't know where she'll be if she steps foot in the UK. I mean, I feel like she would be safe, but we don't know. You know, we've seen what's happening with NECAP at the minute. We've seen the UK, like Canada, like Australia, take very hard lines on these sort of, you know, groups which are on watch lists.
Yeah, Dave, Liberal Canada banning NECAP?
I was surprised, but I guess it's reflective of the pervading sense of fear stemming out of the White House, right? I wouldn't have thought that Trump had this level of reach, but apparently he does. And we may well talk about the late night talk show host kind of fiasco that's going to be at some point, but it's reflective of what is, in my opinion, a creeping amount of fascism coming out of the White House, and I don't think that's too hysterical to say. In terms of the UK and Sally Rooney, more than 1,600 people have been arrested in connection with Palestine action since July. Sally Rooney obviously, of course, gave that interview recently in which she said, if my financial support towards this organisation makes me a terrorist, well then so be it. It is a shame that she wasn't able to celebrate this award she was given during the week for her novel Intermezzo, but she did send a very eloquent statement in her place. And I think it's just, we've gone beyond hysteria now, as I say. It's not, I was speaking to people in the arts over the last week or two who are currently in the process of renewing visas and that kind of thing, and they have had to just completely take down any social media related support for Palestine. Any interviews they're given, they've had to kind of dodge that subject, and they themselves have said that they don't want to do that, but they've been told by their lawyers, don't say anything right now. Do not, because you will probably be denied the chance to travel to the United States and beyond.
What's it like in Australia, Brianna?
Are you trying to get me fired?
Sorry. Okay. Do you want to move on?
No, I can tell you quite honestly. I remember my first, or was a couple of weeks back into the job, and I was there covering this weekly Palestine marches in the CBD. I'd gone along to cover it, and I was being shouted at. It was really kind of a weird thing because the ABC had been seen as deeply problematic for a while with how they handle things. An ABC journalist, Antoinette Latouf, had been taken off air. Her court case had just wrapped up because she'd posted things from a Human Rights Watch, which is a third-party organisation, talking about, you know, starvation and things that were going on in Gaza. And she was told that she was biased. There was a group called Lawyers for Israel who lobbied for her to be taken off air, and she was taken off air and had to go through a years-long trial. And it was found that the ABC did act incorrectly. And, you know, it was just really difficult for journalists working there. I was an ABC journalist. It talks about, could we say, could we call it a war? Could we definitely genocide was off the table, but could you call it a war? It was very sensitive. And I went along to this protest, and I had, you know, people call me like a Zionist stooge. And then after I finished my broadcast, I found out that other activists had made complaints against me because behind me in one of the shots was people had held up photos of slain Hezbollah leader Nasrallah Azrallah. I was like, yep, that's one. And it had held up very quietly in the shop behind me. And I don't have eyes in the back of my head, so I couldn't see what was going on a full 180 behind me. But they'd sort of said that, you know, I was like not a good journalist. I should have made reference. I should have said that they were holding up, you know, photos of a leader of what's considered a terrorist organization. And didn't have eyes in the back of my head. So I had to go and explain this to bosses. We had to go through the formal complaint process. But that was the heat. And I was like, lads, I can't be called, you know, a Hezbollah sympathizer and also like a Israel stooge in the same day. Pick a side. I can't be both. So that's the temperature of what's going on. So journalists and anyone in the public space is very, very nervous in Australia. It's been quite difficult. Although I think things are changing now. I think what happened with the ABC has really, you know.
Well, let's talk about the banning of Jimmy Kimmel. A listener says, banning the show was right. No presenter should be allowed to mock a horrific killing. That's not free speech. Dave Hanratty. He didn't mock the killing, did he, in any way? What he did was pass a comment about Trump's reaction to it. You have the comment to hand.
I do, yeah. So he had a monologue on Monday Night Show, and he said that he referred to the MAGA gang and said that they were, quote, desperately trying to characterise this kid who murdered Charlie Kirk as anything other than one of them. And he said that they were trying to score political points from it. The mockery of anything came about Trump when he said, and as we can all see, everyone, Trump is really broken up by it. Here's a video. And it was Trump on the White House lawn talking to someone who said, hey, how are you holding up with Charlie Kirk? Are you all right? And he immediately went, yeah, grand. And then he started talking about, was it the construction?
Yeah,
the construction that was going on. He was like, look at all the trucks, the construction. So as we all know, construction is, of course,
this is the new venue that he's building.
Yes, and as we all know, construction is, of course, the fourth stage of grief. So fair enough, like, that's okay for him to go through it like that. We all have to go through these things. Donald, I hope you're doing okay. But no, he didn't. Jimmy Kimmel, for the record, did not mock the murder of Charlie Kirk. That's not what happened. But it's been completely spun and twisted that way in rapid time.
Okay, let's just hear some US talk show show hosts react. This is Jon Stewart, Seth Meyers, Jimmy Fallon and Stephen Colbert responding to the Kimmel accent.
Now, some naysayers may argue that this administration's speech concerns are merely a cynical ploy, a thin gruel of a ruse, a smokescreen to obscure an unprecedented consolidation of power and unitary intimidation, principleless and coldly antithetical to any experiment in a constitutional republic governance. Some people would say that. Not me, though. I think it's great.
Donald Trump is on his way back from a trip to the United Kingdom where he was met with protests. While back here at home, his administration is pursuing a crackdown on free speech. And completely unrelated, I just want to say before we get started here that I've always admired and respected Mr. Trump.
Well, guys, President Trump just wrapped up his 3-day trip to the UK and he
looked incredibly handsome.
Yesterday, after threats from Trump's FCC chair, ABC yanked Kimmel off the air indefinitely. That is blatant censorship. And it always starts small. You know, remember like in week one of his presidency, Gulf of America. Call it Gulf of America. Sure, seems harmless, but with an autocrat, you cannot give an inch. And if ABC thinks... if ABC thinks that this is going to satisfy the regime, they are woefully naive.
Didn't Jimmy Fallon go suck up to Donald Trump recently?
That's exactly what I wanted to point out, that I thought his little bit there was too cute by half, because before he played the voiceover gag, he said, anyone worried that we won't keep saying what we want to say or we'll be censored, don't worry, we'll do it just like I normally would. But I hope that involves inviting Donald Trump back on the show to once again ruffle his hair and present him as this non-threatening cartoon character, as he did. I think the other guys have a lot more kind of substance to what they were saying, especially Colbert at the end there.
And I think there was an Australian journalist got a lash of the tongue as well from Trump this week. Probably while you were flying over, you didn't see it. But basically was told by Trump that because your Australian Prime Minister is due to visit soon, and he would be taking issue with him about the behaviour of the journalist and the way that he asked questions.
Well, given that, you know, Albo and America have had a bit of a testy relationship ever since Australia decided to recognise Palestine as a state a couple of months ago, which was a huge step for Australia. So things have been a bit testy between Albo even before the election, at the Australian election. So, yeah, I don't think running to teacher is going to, tattletaling on to on a journalist of the Prime Minister is going to have the effect he thinks it's going to have.
Also, I assume like the irony is not lost on people here, right? That, you know, Charlie Kirk and others are all about free speech, and yet anything you say towards them, even calling Charlie Kirk right-wing is apparently, you're not allowed to say that. You're not
you might lose your job, according to J.D. Vance.
Not that I expect too much in the way of intelligence and nuance from these people, but really?
I think my worst fear is a bunch of comedians making fun of me. Like, that is the funniest people on the planet. Being mad at me.
They're not the funniest people on the planet.
It's terrifying.
Okay, let's move on to other things. We know Australia is not part of Europe, Rihanna, but it has managed to find its way into Eurovision over the years. Okay, fair enough. But given that Ireland and Spain and other countries are saying, well, we're not going to take part in Eurovision next year if Israel is allowed to continue, what will Australia's position be, do you think?
Yeah, I was watching this very carefully after Ireland came out, and it's the SBS puts on Eurovision. The SBS is a bit different to the ABC. They're both government broadcasters, but the SBS would take, the Special Broadcasting Service would take a little bit of government money, and then they'd also rely on private advertisers, a bit like RTE. They've got that same funding model. But it was really interesting. Everyone was like, what's going to happen? Because SBS was traditionally set up for migrants. Australia was very multicultural. So on the SBS, you might see, like, you'll see RTE news play out. You'll see the Croatian news, just play the Italian news, the Greek news. Before internet, it was really important that everyone watched this. So it was really interesting because obviously they have quite a big Arab audience, which way they were going to go. So I was quite shocked that they have said we're going ahead no matter what. Again, that could be out of respect for the acts. It's been so hard for Australia to get into the Eurovision. We've been knocking on that door for years. Maybe they don't want to upset the balance. But yeah, they haven't really given a reason as to why they've taken this stance other than this is what we always do and we're going ahead.
What do you make of this? An RT's position, which emerged last Friday, I think, of last week, and now it's got support definitely from Spain and I think the Netherlands as well.
Yeah, Spain, I think, are the first of the quote-unquote big five to rock into this. I wasn't aware there was a big five, so, you know.
And there is. They're always guaranteed entry to the final, no matter how crap their song is.
I don't want you. But, I mean, the thing is, what I would say is it's too late by RTE, but not too little, in my opinion. I think it's great to see it finally happen.
Surely it's never too late.
Maybe. Again, this is me trying to better myself as a person, as we discussed earlier in the first half of the segment. I think, fair enough, I wish it had happened earlier. I've been on this very show talking about when Bambi Thug was in the competition with an incredible song, an incredible performance, the best we've done in years, but I would have had so much more respect for Bambi Thug if they had pulled out of the competition. I think Ireland shouldn't have been in it at that time. I understand there's all kinds of red tape. It's good to see them finally rock up and do this, but I just think it's overdue.
And of course, Russia is going to revive its Soviet-era rival to Eurovision, a thing called Intervision. Let's hear an example of it. Yes, that's enough, isn't it?
It doesn't sound too different.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah, I'm ready to run through walls after that. When I saw this story, the only thing I could think of was that Simpsons gag, when Itchy and Scratchy is cancelled and Krusty's like, we now have Eastern Europe's favourite cat and mouse team, Worker and Parasite, which is one of the best Simpsons gags ever. So yeah, this could rule though, you know? This could be awesome.
I'll be watching. They tried to bring it back in 2014 and the catchy tagline was it was in response to the West's moral decay, which, you know...
This was the same year that Russia invaded Crimea.
Yes, so it's been sort of a Putin soft power thing that's been kicking around. I think the proper last Intervision was 1980. So, you know, a different time, Iron Curtain going on still. But yeah, they tried to bring it back in 2014, didn't happen. But I just love, the tagline was to fight the moral decay of the West, which is the most party, you know, which when I go to a party or a concert, that's what I want to go for.
Either of you doing anything for Culture Night?
Well, there are 1,700 events on, apparently, and I'm sad that I'm not in Limerick because apparently there's a tour of a Garda station. I'm not quite sure how that is culture, but there's some cool stuff happening, in fairness. Robert Sheehan, the actor, is doing some kind of talk or some kind of reading it somewhere, and I was saying this to somebody in work earlier on. I find the best thing to do in Culture Night is literally just to walk around and stumble upon something as opposed to plan it out, but if you're the planning out type, there's plenty of free events. So there's a tango, I think, happening somewhere in Dublin. You can go and tango, book away. Enjoy it.
That was the one I was looking at. I'm being Australian, I'm allergic to culture, so I am being, what's that? If it's not sports, we don't really understand it. So, yeah, we're suspicious of the arts. So I think I'm just going to follow my friends, go out for dinner and see where the night takes me.
Indeed, okay. And then when you go home, and don't go for a while yet, Brianna, when you go to Dublin Airport, you'll be able to bring all of your liquids and beauty products and everything in your hand luggage.
That's not even the bit I'm excited for.
Oh.
The bit is, I have a column about it today. Airports inspire like a rage inside me that I think you could like power a city off. It's just the rage other people just bring out in me at airports. Like, we've been doing this for years, guys. When they're trying to bring like 2 litres of shampoo and conditioner in and they're holding up the line, that's gone now. The temptation to punch people in the back of the head is now gone for me. So this is going to work wonders for my mental health.
Do you really think so? Do you really think that you won't still be completely irritated by the general...
Not as bad. I think I'll be a new woman going through the airport.
I mean, Dublin Airport already, I have to say, from experiences this year, is really good to get through. Yeah. I know that people have given out about the time it takes to go, but I've had experiences recently. Once coming back from the United States in August in JFK in New York, and we were an hour and a half, I think, trying to get through security. I was in Istanbul recently, and again, trying to get through passport control, took about an hour. Dublin is great by comparison. This will make it even better.
Yeah, I have to say, Irish people do have their stuff together. I think it's our collective sense of shame and guilt. Like, we're just like, oh, we don't want to be the one that holds up the line. So we're pretty together, I have to say.
Do you notice that, Dave? She's only back a few days and she's already back to we and our and everything like that. She really is one of us.
She never left. Never left. You've always been here in our hearts, Brianna.
We're going to have to see you again before you head back to Australia. Brianna Parkins, thank you very much for being with us. And Dave Hanratty, we look forward to seeing you regularly throughout the rest
of the year.
Thank you
very much,
well. Just a bit of reassurance for you there.
The Last Word with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.